Hi, I'm Frederick Philip Von Weiss, and thank you for consuming the Thunder Nerds, a conversation with the people behind the technology that love what they do and do tech good. Hey, and it's so great to have you. We have Eric Meyer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and we've been chatting for a little bit on and off, and I just so happy to be able to have us be a part of the conference and get to speak to all the amazing people, and everybody's just been wonderful and very happy to share. It's been a great time, and we really appreciate it sincerely.
Yeah. Well, we're glad to have you here. I was actually I know it was a little halting at times, but when you reached out to me, I was like really excited.
Oh, that's awesome!
Have a Thunder Nerds on. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I think we've got some great takeaways and a lot of exclusives for maybe people that couldn't make it to the conference. Either you know, sometimes work gets in the way, sometimes you just can't do it. So there's a lot of good tidbits here and there that will possibly things that you can employ in the field and things that might make you go, oh my man, I really got to make next year.
Well, that would be lovely. We'd love to see people.
Yeah, exactly. Or the next one. When's the next one and where?
The next Innovate Apart is in San Francisco in December. And then we take a short break. And then after that is Seattle in March, Boston in May, Washington, D.C. in July. And then there's Chicago, San Francisco, and Denver, I think is the order we're going in next year.
Okay.
Either that or it's Denver, San Francisco. I should know this. But
so you're all the way into 2019.
We have shows now through the end of 2019.
Wow, that's great.
We have announced shows through the end of 2019. Put it that way.
Yes. Oh, but they will happen and it will come to fruition.
You know. Right. The ones in 2019, sure. Yeah. It's after that.
Yeah.
We haven't announced anything yet.
let me first introduce some of the things that you are, and then I want to ask you about an Event Apart.
Okay.
Specifically, you are an author. You've talked about the web and taught people on the web since 1993 when you had that first project. Which I think I saw something on YouTube once where you were talking about, that was before there was ads. So,
yep, it was. In fact, the first web ads were a year or two, maybe around that same time. Jen Robbins at the Global Network Navigator that O'Reilly had.
Yeah.
Basically, they said, we want to put ads in pages. And she had to figure out, like, what's the best way to do that given the constraints that we operate under here. So, in fact, a lot of the dimensions for the banner ad are just what Jen came up with, mostly.
Wow, that is so amazing.
Right, and it's not necessarily like nobody did any studies to see if it was the right aspect ratio or whatever, right? It was, she defined this, and other people just went basically along with that. Maybe got tweaked a few pixels here and there. I don't know if 486 by 20 was exactly what she did at first, but yeah, like that early stage of web ads was pretty much because Jen Robbins paid. You know, just said she was in charge of the GNN, and they said, we're going to put ads in pages. And
that's so amazing.
That was the entire design brief. We're putting ads in pages.
Okay, go. Ship it.
Okay. Like, should it be a whole page? Should it, have to scroll past it? Should it be here? Should it be here? Should it, what size should it be? All that stuff. She had to come up with answers.
I don't know. It's a skyscraper. We'll call it that. Go.
Right. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So, but that was before we had sidebars.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was science, yeah.
Sidebars didn't come till later.
Oh, man.
Because this is also pre creating killer websites. So it's pretty much pre-tables for layout when she was making these decisions.
Just flow.
Yeah, just flow.
Wow, yeah. I mean, you think about, the far back times, and sometimes you think about, tables, but you don't even think about further than that.
Yeah, there was a time before tables.
Yeah, there definitely
was. Netscape 1.1. was where table markup was introduced into popular browsers. So if you were designing before that, you had the flow. Wow. There was it was table. Netscape 1.1 introduced tables, floated images, text and background colors for the body. That was it. Because they were body, text equals some hex color, and BG color equals some hex color. There was also A-Link and V-Link for visited link, exactly. And so, right, before that, it was, those screenshots people show of the, like, this was what the first website looked like in Tim Berners-Lee's original browser. It's like pretty much everything looked like. All of the web had a light gray background.
Yeah.
Because that's what the browser color was. It wasn't white, it was light gray. And there was no way to change it until Netscape 1.1. And then somewhere around that time, they all started to shift to black text on white background instead of black text on light gray.
Yeah, I mean, I think about the hard times going back and straight around corners in boxes, you know, like.
Yep. Nice L table.
Yeah.
Like the little slices.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, man. Everybody has it so easy these days.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Kids. New kids. But when I was your age.
But it's funny, the easier they have it, also, it comes with a giant level of complexity. Mm-hmm. You know, you might even be able to argue, and I think some people do, that it's harder to get into this industry now because there's so many different ways to go. It's not just CSS or HTML or a lot of ways. The back end developer who used to be this higher echelon kind of person you talk to is now that front end engineer, that person that knows all these JavaScript frameworks or even some CSS pre-processing things to a degree and everything that goes along with Grid, which could be daunting for people to learn. And you'll get that pro FOMO, as I like to call, where you know, oh, I want to know this, I want to know that, and where do I even start? Oh,
yeah. I will say Grid makes it actually, I think, easier to get into this. Grid is hard for those of us who have already internalized the stuff that we had to do with floats.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, this is completely different and I'm going to tear my hair. Like, the kids who are coming in now, we're just going to teach them Flexbox and Grid. And then eventually they're going to have to deal with our legacy designs. And you're like, why is all of this floated? What idiot thought this was a good idea?
Why would you do a clear fix for it?
What does that even mean? Right. Exactly. That there was a point at which new designers would come out of whatever, and they'd be like, "Why is this site all in table markup? That makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Why would anyone do that?" And you'd be like, "Sit down, Junior.
Yeah,
we got to talk about the olden times." And yeah, it's gonna be the same. I think learning now is actually easier. Certainly, there's a lot more you could do, but almost everything you could do has been designed for that purpose instead of some like kludgy hack that we cobbled together because it was all that we could do.
I think you're absolutely right. It's so much easier if you just come in with a fresh mind and you could go, oh, well, obviously that makes sense. It's in a grid. How difficult is that?
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah.
So you are also a teacher, and we said the co-founder of An Event Apart, which I think we said was 2006, right?
So our first show was actually the end of 2005.
Okay.
It was in Philadelphia in December of 2005, December 4th, if I remember correctly. And it was like 100 people. It was three speakers, Jeffrey, me, and Jason Santa Maria.
Oh, wow.
Possibly his first public talk, something like that. But it was like 100 people, 100 attendees. We were in this sort of oversized, sort of a cross between a drastically oversized conference room and a theater. It wasn't really a theater. Like, it was all just chairs lined up, like in the upper back corner of the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
2006, we had four shows, and that's also when we did our first two-day show. And then 2007 is when we stopped doing one-day shows, and we were doing all two-day shows at that point. And it was, you know, instead of one day with three or four speakers, it was 2 days with, I think it was 12, that kind of thing. So we sort of picked 2006 as a split the difference, right?
Sure.
It was when we were still figuring out the format, and it was sort of when we got rolling.
So what was the Phil Collins? What was the genesis of this? Why
Peter Gabriel? Wait, you're talking.
Oh, whoa. Okay, that's 75. I'm talking about post 75. Yes, but yes, we all know Peter Gabriel.
It was Jeffrey and I had been speaking at conferences and running into each other and sort of getting to know each other. We knew each other from the Web Standards Project, but then we actually got to meet in person a few years later at various conferences, and we would start like hanging out, having meals together, and with other speakers. But at some point we started to say to ourselves, you know, this isn't a great experience, either as a speaker or an attendee.
Okay.
We feel like we could do this better. And at first it was, hey, kids, let's put on a show in Grandpa Joe's barn, right? It was sort of a road show where we would just come in for a day and be gone for a day. Like, not super complex, not, you know, five tracks of 30 speakers each.
It wasn't an experience. You were coming to town.
We were coming to town. The idea is that we would come to town for people who were local. Still treat them well, right?
Like, sure.
Actually, instead of at lunch saying, well, there's restaurants, see ya. It was, you know, we'll make sure that people are fed.
Nice.
And so that we can all sort of be concentrated in here and you know, talk shop over lunch, or not talk shop as people prefer. And it was also that the conferences we were going to, we felt like weren't serving the kinds of people we were. So it tended to be either like beginning web design, where the talks were generally like the first half hour of an hour long talk would be, this is what HTML is and why you should use it, or this is what CSS is and why you should use it. And then in the other half, they might actually talk about things you could do. And we felt like that there was an audience of people, like people who read a list apart, or the people who were reading a list apart at the time, and still do, who like didn't need to be convinced that CSS was a good idea, or that accessibility was a good idea,
yeah,
right? Or what HTML was, right? And that you could spend the time on stage rather than, you know, 5 minutes of introducing yourself and 15 or 20 minutes of introduction, just like, let's get to it, right? We all know what these things are. Now let's talk about how to use them, like the best ways to use them, or interesting new techniques, or, you know, the latest developments in browser world mean that this is going away and this is coming into focus, you know, that kind of stuff. And we rolled the dice on there being an audience, and it turns out there has been one.
So, absolutely. Yeah. And would that germinate the name of apart?
Yeah.
You know, because it definitely is an event apart from what you just spoke about.
Right. And, you know, since we were thinking of it as the kinds of people who read a list apart, who would like to go to a conference, right, and want to go to a conference where they're not, or where they don't feel like a huge chunk of the time that they paid for is, you know, boring them, or, you know,
sure,
wasting their time because they...
I know HTML. I don't need that.
Yeah, like, you don't have to tell me what the difference is in the heading levels. I got that.
Sold.
Dialed in, right? I'm there. I know what the attributes on the link mean, that kind of thing. Which is not to say you couldn't talk about that. Like, we could do a talk, we could have done at the time, a talk on micro formats to say, okay, I'm sure you all know about the rel and the rev attributes on the A element, which you never use, but here's a reason why you might use them, right? Here's a thing. So we kicked around a number of names, but we just kept coming back to, it's for people who read a list apart. So we thought, and let's just call it an event apart. And there's sort of their sister companies. Like, I'm not on the list apart board and the list apart.
Oh, you're not.
It's not all the same company. They're sort of orthogonal to each other.
Oh, interesting. I thought they were.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we share information back and forth, and we work with each other and that sort of thing. But they are like legally separate entities.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
just nice. A thing. But all and same thing with the book apart. But they're all sort of talking to the same audience, right? The same reason why a book apart, which again, I'm personally not part of, Jeffrey is. The books aren't about here's how to use HTML, right? They're here are the changes in CSS3, or here are the, not that we talk about that anymore, or, you know, here's how to really actually do web typography, and not take a whole chapter on JavaScript, right? It's like, here's the script.
Yeah, it's just understood that you're here for this, you're here to learn, you want some things that you could actually employ.
Right.
And I already have my toolbox, I've been doing this every day.
Right.
I need a little bit of the what's next coming down the pipeline.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's so cool. So do you mind if we jump into your talk? So your talk is Fit for Purpose, Making Sense of the New CSS.
Right.
What's up with this new CSS?
There's a lot of it.
There's a few things here.
Yeah,
there, I understand.
I touched on a few of them. I talked about feature queries, Flexbox, and Grid.
Feature queries? What's that?
Feature queries.
Oh, feature queries.
Feature queries.
Not future?
Not future.
Oh, okay.
Ad supports.
Yeah.
Is the thing that other people know it as.
Yeah,
where you can say, hey, if you support Display Grid, here are some padding and margins of things that you should apply if we're doing grid. Otherwise, it gets ignored.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like media queries, except you're querying for feature support.
Yes.
So that was one of the things I talked about. But yeah, the idea generally being, I was trying to share some of the things that I've learned working with these things,
uh-huh.
and you know, ways that I've found these technologies really useful. That aren't, you know, as an example, using CSS Grid, I used it for rapid prototyping. And I still use it for rapid prototyping. And when I'm done prototyping, that grid code might not ever see the light of production.
Right? Sure.
I may have to convert it all to whatever. It depends on the audience and what I'm trying to do and, you know, my progressive enhancement situation. But I can just develop so fast, like layout, just rearranging stuff, changing stuff. You know, having, like, figuring out the how it's going to respond, not necessarily with media breakpoints.
Yeah.
Because with grid, you can do a lot of responsiveness without having to do media queries. You know, and I, like, literally in the space of a couple of hours, I can go from the PDF I got to working, like, responsive prototype. And, you know that it's been put together in a maybe only for one browser and that I may never ship this.
And that's okay.
It's totally okay because it only took me 2 hours to get the working prototype. Like, and not using a framework, like literally wrote it from scratch.
Oh, you didn't want to jump into the bootstrap?
I'm not jumping into that. And, you know, nothing, not saying anything either way.
Yeah.
At least not on record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Importance.
For the same reason that I try not to talk about JavaScript libraries, because people get super, like, invested in.
Oh, they really do. No, it's cute. No, it's, yeah.
Yeah, no, not going there. Right, so, you know, maybe by the time we're done with prototyping, we say, okay, great, this is what we're doing. And then I have to figure out, okay, how am I going to, maybe I have to figure out how I'm going to do it in Fluxbox. Maybe mm-hmm. not. Maybe I can just ship the grid.
Yeah.
Or, as I talked about, in my talk on Monday, in the 2 hours that I, like, put together a prototype, I was able to then send it back to the team, and the team realized that was probably not the direction we wanted to go in from a design sort of experience perspective.
And sometimes that helps being able to actually see it and go, oh, you know what, you know, no.
It seemed like a good idea when it was static, and then it wasn't,
yeah.
Right? I think it's kind of the experience that was had, like, you know, the guy who designed it. I mean, it's a visually striking design. You know, nothing wrong with it. I mean, I think anyone who looked at it would say, wow, that's really, like, that's kind of a new approach to design. Really interesting. But he said, you know, when you sent back that prototype, right, and I messed with it, I realized that wasn't the way to go. And in 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
Saving the entire team a lot of time and possibly sunk costs. Because if we kept going with it, if, you know, if we said, yeah, this is the direction we want to go, it's bold, it makes a statement, right? And then he, like, started to build out a whole bunch of other things, and then we started implementing it, right? It could be 2 months later before we realized this isn't working.
Yeah.
Now what do we do? Do we try to fix this? Do we scrap it all and start over? Like, nobody wants to scrap and start over, especially after that much time. You start thinking to yourself, oh, okay, can we make it work? Can we go with it for a while just to sort of make the be the bold statement and blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
But instead, no.
So is that one of the big selling points now, that so you could just be able to prototype so much quicker?
For me, yes, because when you're doing that, you don't have to worry about, oh, what's my support profile? Oh, do I have IE11 users? Oh, do you have this, that, the other? You know, do I have IE9 users? Is Netscape 4 still a primary constituency for me?
IE6,
yeah. Or whatever. You can just, like, really quickly put it together and have it working. And then later you can start to worry about those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Start to think about, you know, what does our usage profile look like? Are we 98% Chrome and Firefox? And if so, maybe we just deploy with this and the other 2% get still a perfectly functional website where everything is in flow order, but it's not all, like, super laid out. Or maybe we write a few things to, like, okay, well, we'll have a couple of columns, or we'll split this part up within this part, you know, and we can use Flex for that because Flexbox has, like, literally 98.5% support. It's pretty much old versions of IE, and that's the only thing that's missing. Even Opera Mini supports Flexbox.
Oh, does it really?
Yes, it does.
Oh, see, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so important to make sure to think about that. You don't have to deliver that same experience for every device, browser, what mm-hmm. have you. As long as you are delivering a experience that is holds value, mm-hmm. holds true.
Yeah, and they can get the information that they came to get.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Even if it's not like put in a little bubble over here and then something is flowing past it with CSS shapes. It's like, that's all cool, mm-hmm. but if they just get paragraph, paragraph, they still got the information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's still available for them. Uh-huh. One of the things I'm citing from your thing here is that there are some trade-offs, and what are the trade-offs? Trade-offs were made at what cost?
Yeah, so that tends to be, sort of that same support question. It's like, okay, we did this way. Who do we perhaps leave behind from an experiential point of view?
Yeah.
Right. Which is, again, I'm not saying, oh, you can't do that because it doesn't look the same in every browser. Websites don't look the same in every browser.
You know, you don't need to.
No, the Event Apart website's going to look a lot different on the Apple Watch than it does on Chrome on a 27-inch monitor. Just really, there's not much you can do about that. So they're not going to look the same. So yeah, sometimes the trade-offs are things like, okay, well, I did it this way, and that means that in older versions of Internet Explorer, or possibly, you know, current versions of Chrome, you know, because not every browser supports everything, this doesn't behave in the same way it does on other browsers.
Right.
But that's usually not a big deal. It's the only time it's really a problem is if you end up with content overlaying other content and none of it's readable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's everything.
That's a problem.
But yeah, you can't have the same expectations of things that you're going to have 10 inches away to 10 feet away. You know, like if I'm mm-hmm. looking at a browsing website on my television, it's a different experience, and you have to cater for that experience.
Right? Yeah. 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 There's I've sometimes said there's a big difference between a print ad in a magazine and the same print ad on a billboard.
Yeah.
And if we've all, I think those of us who drive have seen at some point somebody who didn't think that through, a billboard that has a headline that's got all this little text. And you're just like, okay, first of all, I can't see that till I get close. And second of all, if I try to read it, I'm going to hit somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But they didn't consider that. You know, oh, if we put all that text up there, that's actually a driving hazard, as opposed to in a magazine, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because if someone's interested, they can take a few seconds, right?
Yeah. And most likely, you're going to drive by and you're not going to read it. You might see the photo and you might read one word and you just keep going.
Right.
How effective is that?
Right. And I mean, it depends on the word. I've literally seen billboards where there's a picture, there's text, and I can't read any of the text. I'm like, I know there's a picture there. I have no idea what they were trying to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, so you have to make those same kinds of decisions, right? You have to say to yourself, all right, like, what are we prioritizing for? Like, the way I design now is, when I implement designs,
uh-huh.
it's all in responsive view at mobile sizes. That's the first thing I do.
Yeah.
Right, because that's going to be a linear flow, most likely. The very few things are going to be side by side because I don't have that space.
Right.
Yeah. So I got to figure out, like, how am I going to do this and make it, you know, brand appropriate, et cetera, and still have it work. And then, okay, I've got that nailed down. I'm going to bring it out a bit to, let's say, tablet size. And is there anything that now, do I have any pages where the text is too small and wide so it's hard to read? And then do I shrink it down? Do I go up with the text size? Do I do both? Right? Is there room to put these two things side by side the way that we want them at desktop, or do I need to wait? And then from there, go out to desktop size. It's mobile first, right? But it's sort of mobile first implementation because it works for me because you're prioritizing that sort of basic linear experience.
And it really helps you identify what's paramount.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah. This is the most important information. This is what I need people to consume. And especially when you take in account certain verticals or certain services, products, it really helps you identify that what really needs to be the top of focus.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the middle of a project right now where that's doing that is actually in a few places. I would find a situation where I'd say, what should I be emphasizing here? Because the design guidance I have doesn't really tell me. So I can go back to the designer and say, what should happen here? I'm like, oh yeah, interesting. Well, let's make this headline blah, 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 or let's make this paragraph a little bigger, or you know, let's not even show that thing, whatever, you know, because it's not really necessary here. Yeah, and you can, it's a sort of a stress test.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
To start at that little, you know, because when you're on your phone or whatever, and you're scrolling through a site, like how long do you really want to scroll?
Yeah, you don't.
You don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, on the Event Apart website, on our event pages, we have the schedule, like the full agenda, right?
And you could collapse it. Yeah.
Yeah, so that the descriptions go away, or you can expand it so it has everything. And this was a while back. It's not on the project I'm working on now. We realized, you know, we went back and forth on should they be collapsed by default? Should they be expanded by default? And eventually we finally realized it depends. They should be collapsed by default on mobile, but it should be expanded by default on desktop.
Yes.
To sort of take those two very basic things. And then you can toggle easily. But on mobile, you don't want to keep scrolling through all those descriptions, you know, by default.
Yeah, I just want to see who and when
and when
and a little bit of what.
Yeah, well, like what's the title?
Yeah.
That's what you get. You get speaker title time. Yeah. And then if you click it, it gives you like the nice prose.
Yeah.
Yeah. It tells you like here's what you're going to learn and here's sort of the setup and yeah, all that stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think is next as far as we talked about in your talk again is making sense of the new CSS. What is the things to look for? Obviously, you know, there's things like the grid, which we've all talked plenty about, and there's still things with inside of that we don't know what it could do. There's variable fonts coming down the pipeline. What are things that we need to look for?
I think what we're going to be looking for in the next little while is people getting used to doing things like grid and variable fonts and figuring out like interesting ways of doing them. Like, you know, we had float-based layout for years before somebody came up with what became called the one true layout, where you could like arrange with floats and negative margins, you could arrange the columns in a source order independent way.
Yeah. Right?
Literally 9 years it took to get to that point.
Yeah.
Okay. Granted, there were fewer of us banging on things then, but I think there's going to be a lot of that. It's going to be, okay, we can define a grid. Awesome. Like, what are the various ways that the stuff that Jen Simmons was talking about? You know, how can we take advantage of the fact that a grid, parts of a grid can flex and grow and shrink in different ways and at different stages where these things collapse first and then this thing collapses second and then this thing collapses third or alternatively expands out so that we can have, let's say, layout components or layout patterns that are fully responsive to their context, even if you don't know what the context is.
Yeah.
When I say fully responsive, I mean the difference between this tablet and this tablet, or this tablet and this tablet, or this tablet and, you know, somebody comes out with a square tablet. I don't know. But
who knows? It could happen.
Exactly. And so, you know, how does this respond? And the answer is it like literally responds for any situation. Like, you know, Jen started to look at that sort of stuff. But, you know, I don't know, maybe there's a pattern where you use it, you define your grid, and you put things on it, but then you use transforms in sort of subtle ways to, like, pull stuff over a little bit so it's still of the grid, and yet the design doesn't look like it's a grid because things are sort of not lining up.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, you might think, wow, there's no grid here. How did they do that? And then you, well, there's a grid. We just move this over, and this thing got moved up, and we just you know, twist it a little bit. Like, I don't know, maybe that'll be a thing. Like, maybe that'll be the next huge revolution in design as people figure out those patterns. Or maybe not.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, and do certain things like, and I think it's worth addressing things like a web flow. Do they come in and kind of help people get more used to the idea? Or or maybe there's a new bootstrap. And I know Foundations coming out with their own CSS grid kind of layout tool, which is, in my opinion, maybe a better tool than Bootstrap, since you can just include certain things you want and you don't have to include the whole big thing. It's a lot cleaner. Like, do those kind of tools, I know we tend to poo-poo on that a little bit, but do those tools help people understand these kind of ideas better? Could it be a gateway rather?
I think, yeah, that's possible, quite possible.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah, kind of like the way I think a lot of people, their first site is usually a WordPress site.
Yeah.
And they, or at least it's been that way recently, where they'll go in and they'll, you know, I need to make a change on this, and I'll get a little bit of an idea of how to use PHP or CSS. And from there, that kind of is the catalyst of their career.
Could be.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, who knows? So what's next for the conference? I know we talked about...
What's next is I have to go introduce the next speaker.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
All right, great. All right, well
that's what's next.
All right, great. Yeah.
And then, yeah, the shows are going to come in 2018. Yeah. And next year, they're all 3-day shows.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, okay, that's amazing. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Eric, thank you so much for being on the show. Okay. And thank you again so much for inviting us, and we've had an amazing experience.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it. Make sure you watch all the videos. Take care.
Thanks for consuming the Thunder Nerds. We honestly and sincerely appreciate you watching and or listening to the show. Please subscribe on YouTube and iTunes. Write us a review, kick a few stars our way. And above all else, please remember to send your favorite book suggestions to Brian Hinton.
I like romance novels. They have happy endings.
I should have known the Territor didn't mean us any harm when the Sword of Omens didn't obey me. And anyway, it was just plain stupid to assume it might be bad. Just what the fuck am I talking about?